Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Linda Libertori is joining us on the podcast today. Linda owns some rental properties in the Chicago area, and she also owns a business where she's a virtual property manager. So in that business, she's dealing with a lot of different landlords, and she sees what people are doing to collect rent. And so I want to talk to her today about some different ways to collect rent and see if we can maybe figure out what the best way for us is. Linda, before we get into the interview, I just want to ask you about a welcome letter that you send out when a new tenant moves in. Can you tell me about that letter?
Well, we have a couple positive things. So in addition to just kind of onboarding them and saying, you know, here's the neighborhood, here's, you know, kind of the do's and don'ts for the building, of course, you know, as much as you could. And we always suggest, again, process. You know, this should become a template that you can save and change depending on the neighborhood. But we're also asking for all the additional, you know, let's say emails, emergency numbers. You know, we keep saying that it's really close to the point in time where cities are even looking for if there were to be some natural disaster in an area, that they're able to send out a blast, I'll say, to everybody. Mm-hmm. So trying to always get updated contact information is part of our welcome. Anything I'm forgetting, Dan? I'm trying to think of the contact information.
Maybe do you have a utility information in there?
Oh, absolutely. The utility information, all the local resources that they need so we can expedite that transfer of utilities, you know, whatever. And sometimes that's, you know, varies, of course, from county to county, how people take care of that. I think we may have talked a little bit even about water, you know, how some of the different counties and municipalities really allow the landlord to put the water in their name, but others, it's the backup.
Right.
Because ultimately the landlord's responsible for that home, where with electricity, et cetera, the tenant won't be getting the, you know, electricity if they stop paying. So all that becomes really important.
Do you recommend that people put a deadline? Is one thing that I do with tenants when they're going to move in is I tell them straight up, but when we sign the lease, hey, I've got the utilities set up to turn off on July 1st. The day you're moving in. So you need to call the utility company and keep it on. Otherwise, you're not going to have power when you come in. So do you find that that's maybe too strong for people? Because
No, Dan. I find just opposite. And, you know, and it's true of all of our lives. And, of course, this is our business, so we're focused on it. But we have to remember when things aren't our business, we don't think it's a priority and it goes to the bottom of the stack. And I find just opposite. Like, we do that even because we do some ACH payments. And ACH payments that are, let's say, ones where you want to automatically take money from an account on the first of each month. Mm-hmm. We used to, like, extend that, like, you know, and you just realize, like, now it's like, no, you got to have it by the 12th, you know. So
right.
Even though it's kind of an arbitrary deadline, you realize this is why big businesses add in those dates. Because of the fact that people want to straggle in, they don't want to make it a priority. So no, I would absolutely enforce what you're saying.
Yeah.
Definitely put dates and times in there, because it's hard enough or difficult enough to get them to follow it, to get a tenant to prioritize that without putting a date, you know?
Right. And one thing that you were telling me earlier is that you give them a list of charitable organizations that if they run into a tough time, tell me about this. I think this is interesting.
Oh, that's key. That is really key. You know what? We find that really, really helpful. And there's a website too. I'll have to provide that to you, but it's like, you know, you can look it up by state, and it's basically a list of charitable organizations in your area that help when people run across tough times. So we include that in the welcome packet because we suggest that it's really easy to talk about what I'll call an uncomfortable situation when you're not in it. So by providing that as part of the welcome packet and saying, you know, hopefully you'll never need this, Dan, but we did include a list of places that will help you, if something, you know, were to, you know, temporarily, you know, some places have temporary layoffs, you know, there's people that close down, shut down for a few weeks over the holidays, some types of businesses. So we have provided you with that list in the slim chance that you need it. And that way it's brought up in a very positive way. And you can circle back to that if that tenant were to call you in a bad situation and now be looking for you to basically extend a line of credit that you don't want to do. Or in some cases, people I work with can't afford to do that. Right. Depending on where they are in their portfolio, they're not in a position to give out short-term loans, you know.
Right. So if they can't make the rent payment for that month, you're not the charity. They're not expecting you to take a $200 loss. Go to one of these organizations and get the $200 from them. That's pretty much the expectation you're setting up.
Absolutely.
I like that. So tell me about different ways that people are collecting rent. So you mentioned ACH. What about having the tenant go to the bank and deposit the money directly into your account? Do you advise that? Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I think, you know, people do it. And I always like to, you know, be open to the fact that it's not, I'll say, just my way. But I think best practices say you have to kind of look at each of the methods, even ACH. You know, I've had people where they sign up for auto debit. When I say they sign up, meaning, let's say, a leasing agent sign them up and they bring the contract in. The owner says, well, they weren't really a strong credit, but we took them because they're ACH. And I would say, let's examine that. Right. ACH means I'm automatically going to take it from their account. But if there's no money in that account, that's not going to save the day. Okay. Right. So, and then let's use the same analogy when we talk about people depositing the money to your account. What I've seen happen, what I've seen people experience is, once you get, let's say, you know, a mid-size, small portfolio, small to mid, right? Maybe 20 properties, you know, even probably 10, depending on how busy you are in the day. What it becomes is a pretty difficult task for the landlord to keep up their bookkeeping to identify who has not paid. Mm-hmm. So if we step back a second and say I have 10 tenants and they all have rent of, you know, let's just say $1,000. And for the sake of argument, maybe they could be $1,000, $1,100, $1,200. Mm-hmm. But the reality is not everybody, depending on, again, the area and the times, pays that exact precise amount, right? When they make their rent, unfortunately. And I'm not saying that happens every month, right? But sometimes that happens. So what this particular, actually a couple of them, ran into is they started to fall further and further behind on keeping up with the legal process in their state of getting out their notices. So let's just say, for example, right out here in the Chicago area, the best practice is to issue your 5-day notice on the 6th day of the month. Now, it doesn't matter to the courts if you issue it on the 6th or the 13th, but who it matters to is you, because you're going to lose a lot of money for every day that goes by if you really have, let's say, a problem tenant. But if you can't tell who's paid yet, it may take you till the 13th to get those documents put together. So in order for me to identify who hasn't paid, I have to know who has paid. So the deposits, like on this most recent holiday weekend, when you have non-banking days, you can't see whose name's on the deposit. Even if in a perfect world they put their name on there, you cannot see that until the next business day with online banking. So the image of the deposit slip itself won't be available till the next business day.
Right.
So when on a long weekend, you know, that can be from Friday to Tuesday.
Yeah.
So now we're behind again, you know, now we're once again behind in getting out our notices. So then we have to go to, let's just picture, assuming they may be using a spreadsheet or whatever software they're using, QuickBooks, whatever it is, they've got to go in there and enter in who did pay. to figure out who didn't pay. So while I think it's a great idea, you have to realize, or at least sell it to the tenant, that the convenience has been to accommodate them. And I always suggest that they have them text them an image of that deposit slip immediately after doing it.
Yeah.
So that if you're going to allow this convenience, which it really is, you're giving them a very nice convenience, especially, let's just say, if they're using Chase, you know, there's one on every corner. So you're making it really easy for them to do the rent. So you should assign a little bit of responsibility to make it easier on you, the landlord.
Right. Well, what about going old school and giving them envelopes to mail to you? Do people still do that today?
I would suggest they do. I'd suggest that they look at the community that they're working with. So there's a couple options there. So what I refer to is what I'll call it kind of a non-banking community. We have certainly pockets in the metropolitan urban areas that aren't necessarily banking areas. They're not going to the bank with their paycheck. So they may be going to a currency exchange. They may be at the Walmart getting a money order. So in cases like that, I think you have, like, I'll call it almost a whole priority system you could set up by mailing an invoice. You know, and again, their software should probably produce that for them. Even if it's QuickBooks, you know, you should be able to get an invoice or make 12 coupons, if you will. But I've heard of people giving out 12, like when they sign the lease. I personally do not see that as a best practice. You know, in my own life, I would have a hard time finding where those 12 envelopes would be, you know?
So what do people do? Are they mailing the envelope monthly to the tenant?
Yes. Okay. Mail the invoice, mail the return envelope, put the stamp on it. So literally, if you sit down and examine that, you're talking about $12 extra a year, right, with the stamp both ways. And even if you want to add some labor charges to that and say $24, if you can help prioritize how important you think that rent is by visually having that come to their mailbox each month, I think it's a win-win.
Yeah.
I mean, we suggest a colored envelope. We suggest going as far as a colored paper and a colored envelope.
That's a good idea.
It just says my rent's important.
Yeah.
You know, that to me, it just speaks volumes to let them know.
What about splitting up payments? If maybe a tenant is having trouble coming up with the whole amount every month, what do you think about doing that? Like maybe saying, all right, you know, we're going to have you pay every time you get paid. Maybe you'll pay half the rent or whatever. Do you think that's a good idea or not?
I'm going to say I fall on the not side.
Yeah.
I think what I find is hardest, and again, keep in mind, I had years of banking. I worked with loans. I can do an amortization by hand. So I find that that's kind of almost a unique skill set to amongst tenants to kind of understand a ledger. You know, if you've ever had the old auto loans, et cetera, you had like a full list of each payment and how it broke down and how much went to principal and interest. I know that's not the same here, but that's what starts to happen when you start to go half payments.
Yeah.
They kind of can't tell which month it's for.
Right.
And then they feel you're tricking them. The tenant feels that you're trying to get one over on them. We try to focus. We really, whenever something like that does, let's say, occur naturally, not even because somebody gave them permission, let's just say they don't have the money and you want some of that money. I think that we always suggest you always focus strictly on the payment column in that case. And I try to shift the attention away from what did it pay for. First, let's both agree on how much was paid. Because generally, you can get out very quickly where the problem is. If you say, if you can show me a payment that I didn't record, I'd be happy to record it. But let's just focus on that for now. And once you can both agree that X amount has been paid in, you know, 2016, then it almost takes away that whole issue of, well, what month did it pay for? If you have another receipt, show it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now we could go back and focus on when you do those. So when you get into splitting it, it just almost, for me, I would say
too complicated.
Those that are good at it, it becomes a shell game. Yeah, right, it becomes a shell game where they're almost trying to put one over on you. When I say they, a tenant that is, you know, at this point, maybe just confused themselves.
Right.
And they can't tell what it's paying for. So let's focus on, we both agree on how much was paid.
Right. Now, what about for tenants that are, maybe they're more tech savvy and they're using email. Some of these non-banking people, maybe they're not on email as much and a letter is good. But what about like sending out email reminders? Do you think that's just as good or?
I think that email reminders are definitely better. One of the things we've seen in our short time, and keep in mind, I did a lot of technology training and stuff. It was slow, I'll say slow to enter technology, kind of the rental market, and slow to enter certain income levels. But now the cell phone has leveled that playing field. So now cell phone email addresses are required many times at the school district, many times at the doctor's office. Housing is now requiring that tenants give them many housing. Not, I shouldn't say all at this point, but many are requiring an email address from at the tenant level when they're filling out the applications to submit for housing assistance. And so email becomes, you know, something that now comes through the phone. So we don't have to be as concerned about who has a computer and who doesn't. And then the same with the text messages. One of the things I say is you really do have to, just as a society, we're all open to all these forms of communication. It's what's causing us all to work 24/7, right?
Yeah.
So the reality is, though, if you do have, no matter what income level, if you have tenants that are at their job, they may not be able to answer your phone call, but they'll certainly can get a text reminder, as you say, for, you know, I could text them reminders for rents. I can email them reminders for rents. Some of our landlords, we build, let's say, a newsletter, like a MailChimp, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
You can send those out on a certain, you know, let's say the 25th of each month, just as a simple reminder of, you know, rent is due and, you know, the dry cleaners has a special promotion this month. You know, you can kind of combine it.
So that's good. So it's almost like you're not being the annoying landlord saying, hey, the rent's due, like you're letting them know about a special promotion. And then, oh, by the way, the rent's due.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you can, you know, if you can kind of picture, let's say, a very simple two column template, you can keep the body of your message to be just, you know, happy, you know, Thanksgiving is coming, happy Thanksgiving in the middle, and maybe the right hand column has, you know, the dry cleaner special, don't forget the rent. And here's some holiday, tree lighting ceremonies happening in the area.
Right.
Keep it simple.
Right.
Don't make it a big job on you. And then once that template's built, you'll just change it for December and January and whatever's going on. I've seen people even add things, Dan, like, you know, don't forget to change your filters. You know, a couple of nice things, you know, said in the right way, you know.
Right. You know, we had Ken Brown on the show a few months ago on episode 83, and he was saying that he gets his tenants to, I guess he sets it up through the HR department at their job so that he gets direct deposited their money right out of their paycheck. It doesn't even go to the tenant. Have you ever done anything like that?
I have not, because depending on the companies, you could almost, the only ones that I'll say are a little bit, amicable to that process generally tend to be the smaller ones. The larger employers are a little more resistant to that because they don't want to get, I'll call it kind of in the middle of it.
Right.
If you will.
Okay.
They're a little, you know, I'll just call everybody's got their lawyers.
Right.
And they're like, no, you're not touching that. you know, so.
What about having a tenant go online and paying you electronically? Have you had any experience with any online portals that to pay? And has that worked out pretty well?
Sure. Again, that's definitely helpful. We have an online portal ourselves, just for our particular company, but you'll notice most of the big players like Propertyware and Rent Manager, what's another one? Buildium, Cozy, I think. They all offer an online portal. I'd say what's kind of more, here's the thing. It's like anything else for all of us. It's one more login and one more password. And right, I'm not sure about you, Dan, but I've got quite the list of what logins and passwords. So if I try to think in empathy for my tenant, I think one of the things they find most convenient, or we're certainly getting lots of requests for, is just kind of your Chase QuickPays, because that's somewhere where they're at already, mm-hmm. you know, that they're especially a certain age group, right? They're not even, they've never seen a check register,
right.
you know,
right.
they're just opening it up. And if you want to get paid, they'll pay you. So you'll want to be in tune to that. I think that's a really important one, depending on your market. Your Chase QuickPays are make it easy, and there's not one more login. So, that being said, a login, there's nothing wrong with it. I just, you know, you just have to kind of think about what's going to make it easiest to pay.
Yeah. With Chase QuickPay, I've never used that. Do you have to be a Chase customer to use that?
You didn't. It's funny and timely. It almost sounds like you're a setup. You didn't used to have to be it. You didn't used to. And I would say within the last 30 to 60 days, I think they required it. So I opened an account specifically just for that. I used to be a Chase client. But when you're a small business, you tend to want to go to a community, you know, as you, I'm sure real estate investors, many of them get established with a community bank for lending purposes and, you know, other purposes. So we actually, when we started the company, got a very good relationship with a small bank. And then we were able to take Chase QuickPay, but very recently they thought, wait a second, these could be our customers too.
Right.
So, and that's okay. It's actually, like I said, it's for us, it's a matter of getting the money. And we're going to do anything we could to get the money.
Sure.
So if that's what it takes, then if that's what, you know, that specific demographic needs, that's fine.
Right. And just for the record, that was not a setup. We're not sponsored by Chase. That was just totally, totally coincidence.
Okay.
Well, Linda, why don't you tell us a little bit about your company, about Secure Pay One, about what you do and how someone could reach out to you?
Oh, sure, Dan. We actually assist. I would say we almost play the role of a virtual assistant. If landlords are at a point of growth and they're trying to grow their business and they feel like they need help, it's pretty hard, as we both know and as your listeners know, to find, I'll call it kind of the perfect employee that understands they may have to answer the phone on Saturday at 8 p.m., or that we're going to be really busy for 10 days of the month, and then I have no other work for you, you know,
right.
And that's an exaggeration, of course. So, but what we do is work well with those landlords, because our experience is just supporting landlords. So we help them with the documents that they need. Maybe like right now in our area, certain municipalities are going through what I'll call their inspection licensing time. So that requires a lot of extra effort from a landlord, because they've got to get a maintenance man out to the property, make sure everything's ready. They've got to alert the tenant to make sure they're going to be available on the day the city said. So it's like, it's almost a 6-step process. You know, we get it in the calendar, we send reminders to everybody. So we're really taking a big burden from them. And again, even if you had somebody in the office, all of a sudden the workload increased just because it's inspection time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we really play a role in assisting, and they like it because they stay in control. They're still making all the decisions and we're following their lead.
So you're almost right in the middle of someone doing it on their own and someone having a property manager. You've kind of found a niche for yourself kind of right in the middle.
Right? We sure did. Yeah. And that niche kind of expanded to fill what the, you know, if you would have asked me 7 years ago, will I be helping with municipality inspections?
Right.
I would have probably never had that on my list of things to do. So what we do a lot of is we attend, as you and I have talked, we've attended lots of RIA meetings So in addition to listening to our clients, what their needs were, we kind of learned those needs even more so when you heard different things being done and you thought, oh, I wonder if, you know, client A could use that, you know, and we saw things like these inspections that could really bury somebody,
sure,
you know.
Sure. Well, give us your website if someone wants to read more about you or reach out to you.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's www, of course, SecurePayOne, SecurePayOne.com. Or, you know what, Dan, if they had any questions at all, we're not a pressure, we're a small company. They could just email me at Linda, and then it's the initial L. So it's Linda L at SecurePayOne, the SecurePayOne.com.
If you're driving or running or you weren't able to write that down, I will go ahead and put Linda's email address and her website on my website. You can find that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode90. Well, Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show and thank you for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.